There is a conversation that we have here that breaks my heart. It happens after acts of violence in religious communities, which, because of the frequency of such horrible events, means we have this conversation often. It is about our safety here. Sometimes it looks like someone whispering in the receiving line, asking what would happen if someone came here with violence on their mind. Sometimes it looks like your board leadership discussing safety policies and asking our insurance company for recommendations. Sometimes it takes the form of an email asking if we have a safety plan. Does our mission to welcome all make us vulnerable to violence? It breaks my heart that we have to have this conversation. That we need to have this conversation. And I know it is a prudent conversation to be having in this world. It would be poor leadership not to have this conversation. And I honor that so many of us want to keep this community safe. Still, I long for a world where this whole conversation is not at all required. A world where no one fears violence when entering their religious community, their school, their home, anywhere. So today, instead of having this conversation in small groups, we're having it as a whole community. I've come to some conclusions and we've reached some insights through these conversations, and this is what I know for sure. First, nothing is safe. Complete safety is an illusion. As Bob read earlier, a drive to the supermarket is a tremendous risk, and to live is to risk dying. Many of us, especially those of us with some forms of privilege, can isolate ourselves from risk, or at least the awareness of risk. But risk is everywhere. We took risks to get here this morning, however we traveled. Every bite of food can cause choking. Every attempt at relationship and connection could end in conflict and pain. To try is to risk failure. We don't notice these risks, which is a good thing. If we paid attention to every single possible risk we take, every car we pass on the way to the supermarket, we would all be frozen in fear. I say all this not to encourage recklessness. Knowing that everything is a risk does not mean that we should just take risks willy-nilly about everything. But we need to remember the truth that none of us are getting out of here, getting out of our human experience, alive. And we should be thoughtful about our risks and realistic about our safety. There are risks worth taking, risks we need to take to live lives of integrity, connection, and meaning. Every meaningful relationship begins with someone taking a risk to build a new connection. Being people of love, people of hope, people of change requires those sorts of risks. And when we can recognize that everything, every choice we make, brings risk, we can look honestly at the risks before us and make intentional choices about what we are willing to do and what we are not willing to do, how we can mitigate the risks that are part of being alive, and how we can keep ourselves and those we love safer, knowing that total safety is not something we can ever achieve. I picked this topic for this Sunday months ago, and the past few weeks have provided a fitting parable, a teaching story about risk and safety and when to take action. As many of us know, Eastern equine encephalitis, a mosquito-borne illness, has been detected in our community and many other communities in Michigan over the past few weeks. Many animals have been infected, and 3 people have died of this disease. 6 others have fallen ill, and they will likely have brain damage and other neurological issues for the rest of their lives. My heart breaks for these illnesses and deaths and the people mourning loved ones and those anticipating a life different than what they had thought their life would be. Many of us following this story also know that Kalamazoo County, as well as other counties in our state, responded to the outbreak of Eastern Equine Encephalitis by planning to spray a pesticide across the county to kill mosquitoes who could be carriers of the disease. Here, in our community, enough people opted out of the spraying that it did not happen. And I'm not going to speak to the wisdom of the proposed spraying today. I'm not knowledgeable enough about the science to speak to that, and I hope you get your scientific knowledge from scientists, not your clergy. But this story is interesting. The rapid response to 9 infections and 3 human deaths draws attention to how we think about safety and risk. Our brains are really bad at assessing danger and risk. It has served us evolutionarily. We got here this far because we see risks everywhere. But it's not very well adapted to the modern world. We didn't evolve to live in a 24-hour news cycle with terrible stories coming at us always. We think uncommon tragedies are more likely to happen and forget about the common risks we take every day. We can get hypervigilant about the wrong thing. Despite the headlines and the panic, being infected with Eastern Equine Encephalitis is rare. About 5% of the people who are bitten by a mosquito carrying the disease develop severe symptoms. The risk of this disease is small in the grand scheme of things. And so, if reducing the number of deaths that don't need to happen was our highest value in this, we would do something else than spray for mosquitoes. Instead, we would focus on reducing the suicide rate, or reducing infant mortality, or reducing traffic accidents, which are a much more common cause of death here than mosquito-borne illnesses. But there's something in our brain that has, in our community, that has taught us that those deaths are maybe not worthy of the same effort, or maybe acceptable in some way, or that they're just a lot harder to fix, and so we're not going to attempt that. Those kind of eliminating those risks would take societal transformation. So we focus on what's closer or what's new or what seems easy to fix, not on what would do the most good to the most people. It's hard. It's easy to follow what's new. So with that parable, that teaching story in mind, let us return to this place and this community and the risks we run here. In recent years, our board, committee on ministry, staff, team, and other leaders have all explored where our real risks are and how we might mitigate them. Our insurance company has also offered wisdom and resources on this. You all have developed policies to keep us, our resources, and our children safe. These include making sure 2 unrelated people count the offering every week, and anybody who works with our children has criminal background checks, and we have limited access agreements for the members of our community who should not be interacting with the most vulnerable people here. So we think about what sort of injuries or accidents or illnesses might be likely to happen, what may be most likely to happen, and how we can act now to both mitigate those risks and be prepared to act if the situations we hope don't happen, happen. Heart attacks might happen here. So we have purchased an automatic external defibrillator, or an AED. So this is a device that you can connect to your body, and it checks your heart's rhythm and can send a shock to the heart to restore a normal rhythm if someone's heart isn't beating the way it should. So our AED is hanging on the wall in the library. So if you go out this door and look to your right, you will see it. It's hanging there on the wall. And it's really kind of an amazing device because it tells you how to use it. If you take it off the wall, it will tell you how to do it, giving detailed directions, and it is nearly impossible to mess up. Like, it detects heart rhythms, and if the rhythm is fine, it will not do anything, which is great. So we hope this never comes into use, but if it does, we're ready. Another risk that we've identified as real and worth addressing is the possibility of a fire or another reason to evacuate the building. So that's why we're having a fire drill today. As a community that uses open flames in worship and other gatherings and has matches stored, I think, in every single room in this building, usually in safe tins, but, you know, things happen. The reality is an accidental fire could happen. And we've decided not to eliminate lighting chalices, and so we are managing this risk. We have regular fire drills. We make sure our tins with matches in them are on high shelves so small people cannot get them. And we've had a fire drill last fall, last spring, and again today. And so if today's goes smoothly, we're hoping to make this only annual. So most of us will know how to get out of this building in a safe way if we need to. Again, I hope we never need to. And probably our most significant risk here is passing along diseases to one another, colds and flus and other viruses, because we hug and shake hands and breathe the same air. So the board talked about this at their retreat last month and had a fruitful conversation, beginning with vaccines and then expanding to explore the difference between safety and the performance of safety. That is, the actions that make us truly safe and the actions that make us feel safe but don't actually make us safe, if that makes sense. It's a fine distinction, but it's our brains get trapped in this sometimes. So with agreement among the whole board that we need to keep our most vulnerable people safe, our elders, our babies, our people with weaker immune systems. And we came up with two recommendations for everyone in this community. So stay up to date on your immunizations and stay home if you're sick. So stay up to date on your immunizations. That means getting your flu shot if you're able. If you want to get a flu shot but can't have barriers to accessing one, let me know and we'll help you figure that out. The board discussed requiring proof of immunizations or medical exemptions as well, but it decided against that for a variety of reasons, including the challenging logistics of it, like how do we even collect that, the impossibility of any sort of real enforcement. We're not going to have bouncers and check IDs at the door. Concern about requiring medical information from members. And that it wouldn't, through all that, whatever we do, be effective. Because this community functions, at least on Sunday mornings, like a public place. Our doors are open to seekers and visitors, Unitarian Universalists passing through town, curious neighbors. While we affirm the teachings of science and encourage people to take steps to preserve their health and the health of others, requiring some sort of medical documentation before you can be part of our community is not in keeping with who we want to be. So, second, and even more important, stay home if you're sick. It's easy to pass along colds and flus and other things. And this instruction is hard for me personally. I have led services when I probably shouldn't be here, when I feel terrible, when I have a fever, when I'm just starting to get better after being sick. And I'm not going to do that anymore. It's not keeping all of you safe, and it's putting my own needs to be in this community and my own sort of internal Protestant work ethic thing above your need to be healthy. And that's not right. So I'm going to change. So the next time I'm sick on a Sunday, I'll hand off the service to someone else and they'll get to preach in my stead, or we'll figure out another plan. I invite you to join me in making this commitment to not come to church when we're sick. And it can be hard. So many of us have that thing that if I can't, you know, I'm so important and so vital and everything will fall apart if I'm not there. And so many of you have important Sunday morning commitments, whether that's in the choir or teaching in our religious education program or at the welcome desk. But we need to trust other people to cover for us and to pick up the slack. We all know how to improvise and adjust. And why we will miss you if you're sick. There's nothing that happens here that's worth risking spreading disease, especially to our most vulnerable members of our community. We need to shift our expectations of ourselves and others and our sense of our own importance to keep one another safe and well. This is important. It's not as glamorous as elaborate drills, but it matters. So those are the risks we're working to mitigate now. And we've done them step by step, introducing a new change about once a year. So once lay leaders, staff, and I feel confident that we are staying home when we're sick, we'll add another risk reduction strategy to our list. This is slow work, but this is how we manage risk and keep ourselves safe, knowing that there always will be risk. This is how we make ourselves safe, or safer, knowing we'll never be fully safe. So I invite you to look at the other communities that you're a part of, whether that's your household or your workplace or other groups you are a part of, and think about what the risks are and how you can do the slow work of managing and minimizing risk. We don't want to be reckless, but we want to be real in our assessments and our actions. You might have noticed that nothing on the list that I put forward is about violence or reducing the risk of violence happening here. There are a lot of reasons for that. Part of it is that a violent action here is unlikely, in part because such acts of violence are rare overall. We know that mass shootings are in the headlines, but we are nearly four times as likely to die from choking on food than in a mass shooting situation. The risk of violence here is also low because we're not a very good symbolic target. If someone in Kalamazoo or the surrounding area is determined to commit violence in support of some hateful ideology, I don't think they'll come here, which is a weird thing to be saying. Part of this is because we're out of town. So someone looking to cause widespread fear is more likely to act in a more densely populated place. We're also not a great symbolic target because of our identities. We are Unitarian Universalists, and unfortunately, most people have no idea what that means. I wish that wasn't true, but it is. So people haven't heard of us, and they don't know what we stand for. The Jewish congregations in town, the Muslim communities, and the Black churches are more vulnerable to symbolic attack, to being a target of violence because of their identity. And I hate this and wish it wasn't true. And it is. So those communities are making different calculations of risk and responding in different ways because the risks are different. Some of you know that there was a shooting at a Unitarian Universalist congregation. It happened in 2008 at the Tennessee Valley Unitarian Universalist Church in Knoxville, Tennessee. It happened on a Sunday morning, and the shooter targeted that church because a former wife attended and because of its values, our values. About 2 weeks after that shooting, the Unitarian Universalist Association took out newspaper ads that read, "Our doors and our hearts will remain open." That is such a powerful idea. Because when we are scared, whether it's a real threat or a perceived threat or maybe something that is both. We can turn inward, see strangers as a threat, and close our doors and our hearts. This might look like active shooter drills that can traumatize ourselves and our children. This might look like eyeing visitors with suspicion first and then welcome, especially if they are different from us. This might look like locking doors to the building and letting each person in individually. There are lots of ways to build walls in the illusion of some safety, but those actions would be compromising our values and losing part of ourselves. So instead, when we feel vulnerable and scared, let us turn outward. Let us open our doors and our hearts to connect with one another, to know that our true security does not come from hardening our hearts, but committing to our values. It comes from knowing one another, by paying attention when someone we love grows distant or angry. Safety comes when we know that there is nothing that we can do that is without risk, that we cannot escape pain and death, but we can live while facing our fears honestly, taking the steps we can to keep ourselves safe. There's a saying that I've learned from the youth in our church. Be a croissant, not a donut. And it's a great metaphor. It's a metaphor for creating community, and it's part of the covenant in some of our youth classes, one of the promises they have made to one another. So donuts, as you know, usually are round and closed. There is no way in. They are a circle walled off from others. This is a way to form community, to be tight and close-knit and not let anyone else in. But it's not a good way. It's the path of fortified walls and suspicions of outsiders. But the shape of a croissant is different. The circle is wide and not closed. So by promising to be croissants instead of donuts, our youth are promising not to be closed off, but forever poised in a gesture of welcome, with open hands, open hearts, and open doors. So let us follow their example. None of this is easy. None of this is safe. But it is the work that we are called to do. So let us be croissants instead of donuts. Let us keep our doors and our hearts open. Let us remember that to live is to risk dying. And let us not compromise ourselves and our souls for an illusion of safety. Let us get our flu shots and stay home when we're sick. May it be so. May we make it so. And amen.